Welcome to Spy Radio with your host, Guru Nostra. The following information presented is the opinion of the speakers, but not necessarily the opinion of the TerraJet Network. All information provided is gained from open source and available on the internet. Caveat emptor. 347-324-3287.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madame and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. Welcome to another edition. I am your host, Colin Knight, a.k.a. Guru Nostra. It's great to be here. Lots to get to tonight, so fill up your glasses, find your favorite seat, crank up the volume, and we'll be right back.
Of all the objectives we seek, first and foremost, is the establishment of lasting world peace. We know only too well that war comes not when the forces of freedom are strong. It is when they are weak that tyrants are tempted.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification.
Good evening, everyone. Glad you could make it with us tonight. It is Thursday, September the 11th, 2014, 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Mountain, 10 p.m. East Coast, and 4 a.m. London, England, and of course, 5 a.m. in Israel and Gaza. It is 7 degrees Celsius in Calgary. That's mid-40s for our Fahrenheit Imperial friends. We just came through a two-day nasty snowstorm, but we're heading back into double digits, back into some summer weather for the last couple of weeks of summer. Our ongoing report of issues from around the world, reviewing news and events, which perpetuates the erosion of freedom around the world. And we hope you will choose to participate tonight and engage in the conversation either by phone, if you're listening live, at 347-324-3287, or if you're picking up the show via archive, we haven't forgotten you. You can email vocr2012@gmail.com. Remember, if you are calling in tonight live, we only request your first name and your geographical area. Other than that, you shall remain anonymous. Special personal thanks to all who have made contact and offered their support for what we do. Without the spy audience, operatives, and readers, and the private link information that you supply, we would not be able to bring you our weekly overview of world events in such a qualified format as we do. Spy Radio broadcasts worldwide on the Blog Talk Radio service, an archive repeats on a number of repeater services, including YouTube archives under VOCR Radio. We transmit throughout North America live, Europe, and beyond. We remind you that our daily Spy Gazette provides news and views which mainstream media either refuse or cannot report. Links and stories from around the world, and we invite you to check it out on a daily basis. Spy Gazette, SPIII. Gazette, one word, .blogspot.com. We have a couple of special shout-outs tonight. John in Dortmund, Germany. Thanks for your contact info, John. We appreciate your network of readers and listeners. You keep spreading the word, sir. Sam in Cleveland, thanks for your support. I appreciate you forwarding the links to your friends. And Julie in Boise, Idaho, just a stone's throw across the border. It was a sincere pleasure chatting with you the other day. And my friend, who has a town named after her, you stay positive. Keep fighting the good fight, and good things are most certainly going to come your way.
You've got email, Governor.
We certainly do. Steve from Texas is first up. Steve wrote, I heard McCain talk about the Canadian border and how porous it is. Is that the case? Well, Steve, as usual, it's another American urban myth. The 49th parallel border between Canada and the U.S. is fairly secure, as far as open borders can be secure. There are a number of intrusion detecting systems along the border which alert some very serious firepower, including a squadron of Black Hawk and the NORAD system. Although Canadian pot smugglers have managed to cross remote border areas, they are constantly being detected, intercepted, and the official border crossings, of course, are highly secured by both American and Canadian border services. I would be more concerned, honestly, with the west coast of the United States. Some remote landings in areas on the Pacific Ocean. The sea patrols down there are sparse, and it's obviously there's been a few reports that people have come ashore. But thanks for your email, Steve. Appreciate it. Carl from New York City, who wrote a great email about 9/11 and its long-term effects, which shall be in the Gazette sometime this week. Carl, there is no way I can make the pain go away. And I dare say the memory of that day 13 years ago shall be remembered for eternity and shall be haunting in everybody's mind. I will say this, that I certainly am glad the president was George W. Bush and not Barack Hussein Obama. Although the cost was high, the enemies of America paid dearly for their actions, and I hope ISIS feel the same pain under Obama. So thanks for your email, Carl. Appreciate it. Let's do one more. How about Peter from Winnipeg? He emailed the show. He said, great show, sir. Love your attitude and delivery. Well, thanks, Peter. I appreciate that. So what's your opinion of young Trudeau? Does he have a chance to be prime minister? Peter. Justin Pretty Boy Trudeau is young, dynamic, certainly worth watching. However, he is a lightweight. He's a lightweight in internal affairs, international affairs, Western economies, social problems, a socialist father and a hippie mother, born with a golden spoon in his mouth. His party, the Liberals, have tried just about every combination to gain momentum and create another Liberal government after Martin left. Remember, he tried Dion. That didn't work out very well. And then Ignatieff, who they brought in from the university in the States, the brainiac, if you will. Both of them were abysmal failures. And now they've brought in the Trudeau name, Justin Trudeau, to the rescue. Of course, his father was Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. Justin is promising to legalize pot. And that's his big, audacious goal, which really shall do nothing for Canada or its national economy, other than possible tourism. He is a lightweight when it comes to international politics. He's a lightweight in provincial transfer payment systems. He doesn't understand the West's opinion of Quebec or international treaty or trade. He's a cut from his socialist father's cloth. Everything he has learned is under the umbrella of being a Trudeau. However, if the country, Peter, truly desires change, he will make a big splash. And that's probably why Mulcair from the NDP is pushing the boat out early, maybe to try and get out in front of the Trudeau resurgence. Thomas Mulcair has told his NDP supporters that he is the viable option to Conservative rule. And let's face it, they are the opposition, the official opposition, right now. So I guess we'll see down the road. And thanks for your email, Peter. Keep tuned in. We may have more on Justin Trudeau the closer the 2016 election gets. Actually, 2015, isn't it? On the other side of this break, we shall look at the Obama plan to defeat ISIS. You think you're ready for this? I don't know. I listened to it last night. Wasn't too impressed.
Now let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents. And the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state. It was formerly Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq and has taken advantage of sectarian strife and Syria's civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. It is recognized by no government nor by the people it subjugates. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple. And it has no vision other than the slaughter of all who stand in its way. So ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. Left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States. While we have not yet detected specific plotting against our homeland, ISIL leaders have threatened America and our allies. Our intelligence community believes that thousands of foreigners, including Europeans and some Americans, have joined them in Syria and Iraq. Trained and battle-hardened, these fighters could try to return to their home countries and carry out deadly attacks. I know many Americans are concerned about these threats. Tonight, I want you to know that the United States of America is meeting them with strength and resolve.
If they think the American people will be intimidated, they don't know us very well. We came back after 9/11, we dusted ourselves off, and we made sure that Osama bin Laden would never, ever again threaten the American people. We came back, Boston strong, blaming no one but resolve. Be certain this didn't happen again. Today, America may be grieving, still grieving from Jim Foley, but the American people are so much stronger, so much more resolved than any enemy can fully understand. As a nation, we're united. And when people harm America, we don't retreat. We don't forget. We take care of those who are grieving. And when that's finished, they should know we will follow them to the gates of hell until they are brought to justice. Because hell is where they will reside. Hell is where they will reside.
So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy. First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
So last night, President Obama spoke to the world in a primetime address. Lasted 15 minutes, and he outlined a strategy to defeat and destroy the terrorists he called ISIL, we called ISIS. During his speech, he made specific references to the slaughter of Muslims, with little about the wholesale slaughter of Christians. His speech was, of course, a teleprompter moment, a chance for Obama to rebuild his sagging popularity and attempt to shore up his poor performance on the world stage. His speech was shaped to offer American voters a vision of what Obama may do, and defending his decisions to not permit troops on the ground, although he has authorized more than 1,500 observers and instructors, Special Forces, Delta Force, to assist the Iraqi forces. Those of you who are old enough to understand American incursions know that as any mission unfolds, the mission creep effect shall place more soldiers in harm's way and shall end up with the U.S. military having to carry the major battle on the ground. Now, a very good and interesting question was raised today after Obama's speech was dissected. Where are the Muslim countries who claim to be with the United States in defeating ISIS? Why are they not putting skin in the game? Why must American forces risk their lives to protect the Middle East when Muslim forces sit back and only throw money at the situation? Obama's statement that he will strike ISIS in Iraq and Syria has brought a knee-jerk reaction from those opposed to American intervention. Putin in Russia has said his threat to bomb Syria is breaking international law. Assad in Syria has said that the U.S. should not attack anyone in Syria without the Syrian government's permission. And Republicans, of course, are very concerned that the friendly Syrian forces with whom Obama wishes to arm may not be that friendly after all. Now, Obama has sat on his hands disconnected from the Iraq-Syria conflict for over a year, ignoring military experts and intelligence reports, allowing ISIS to form and grow into a very effective terrorist organization. Obama's only reason for his latest statements and future actions is that his own party and the Republicans have demanded action, and the polls recently reflect Americans' feeling on the do-nothing president. ISIS can muster about 30,000 troops. They could have been nipped in the bud about 15 months ago. They could have been subdued and destroyed while pillaging in Syria. The wholesale slaughter of Christians in Syria could have been avoided. But in Obama's eyes, they were not Muslim. Not until Muslims were attacked and murdered did Obama suddenly develop a spine. Not until his poll numbers showed he was finished did he react. Not until the Benghazi investigation began bearing fruit and the IRS scandal became public knowledge and the illegal actions of prisoner swap of the Bergdahl case came to light. Only then did Obama look up from his vacationing lifestyle. And frankly, I don't believe Obama is very sincere. I believe he spoke the sentences, used the buzzwords to appease the voters, and he does not wish to use American military might to truly crush ISIS or ISIL. So what's your opinion? Where are you at? What do you think? 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287, live feed, direct on air.
I often tell groups, because I'm often asked, you know, what can we do about the political dysfunction? Well, first of all, I don't care whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, I don't care what you are. Don't vote for someone who proudly says he or she will never compromise.
Michael and I also want to acknowledge your son Jack, who's deployed today. But my father came from a Kenyan family that includes generations of Muslims. As a boy, I spent several years in Indonesia and heard the call of the azan at the break of dawn. But I have known Islam on three continents before coming to the region where it was first revealed. That experience guides my conviction.
You're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith.
As the Holy Quran tells us, the Holy Quran teaches that, the Holy Quran tells us, and the Holy Quran also says, we will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world.
That Hamas does not care about the lives of Palestinians, does not care about the lives of Israelis or Americans. They don't care about their own lives. They consider dying for the sake of their ideology a way
of worship. Don't give them any money. You know, find somebody of your party who's sensible, who understands the legislative process, who's not going to Washington proudly to destroy what our founders built.
This is a record of failure. President Obama and too many of like him in Washington have refused to make difficult decisions because they're more worried about their next election than they are about the next generation.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Voice your opinion. Participate in your future. Become engaged in socio-political events. Say your piece. 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
After listening to the 15-minute address of Obama last night, I'm more convinced that Obama needs to be impeached. His speech last night was not met with enthusiasm around the world, and his claim of a broad coalition consists of 9 countries, many financing the action, but few of them committing forces or personnel. John Kerry is out in the Middle East trying to drum up coalition partners, but everything that Kerry has touched to date has fallen into a piece of garbage, so the chances that Kerry will be successful is pretty slim. He's not the most favorable American out in the Middle East of late. Although the United States are very powerful tactically in the air, this purge of ISIS will require boots on the ground. Iraq and the Kurds cannot do this alone, even if they are trained by U.S. and British military. Now, had Obama not removed his troops from Iraq, the standing forces which were present would have routed ISIS in short order. Now they have the ground advantage. Their actions will now focus upon destruction of major infrastructure, historical artifacts, oil fields, and citizens who oppose them. ISIS will probably begin the scorched earth effect, much like Saddam Hussein attempted before he lost his head to the hangman. Now, after Obama's speech, news quickly broke that Turkey will not allow a U.S.-led coalition to attack Islamic states of Iraq and the Levant terrorists in Iraq and Syria from any Turkish air bases. Turkey will also not permit or participate in combat operations, but will instead focus on humanitarian aid to the countries. ISIS currently controls large portions of territory in Iraq and Syria along the Turkish border. Now, Turkey has come under fire by some critics for indirectly encouraging the formation of ISIS because of its support of Islamist opponents of Syrian President Bashar Assad and its loose control of its borders. Turkey is reluctant to attack ISIS, probably due to the high number of Turkish hostages ISIS is holding. This came from the Associated Press. Turkey can open the Incirlik air base in the south for logistical and humanitarian operations in any U.S.-led operation, according to the official, who stressed that the base most certainly would not be used for any form of lethal airstrike. Now, prior to Obama's speech, many pundits stated they were watching for some very specific goals. Airstrikes in Syria, boots on the ground, permission from Congress, and that U.S. will not act alone. Obama's address to the nation, although hitting all of the buzzwords in an attempt to appease the unwashed, failed to explain why he believes he does not require permission to attack a sovereign nation such as Syria without clear direction from Congress. The overnight backlash from a number of leaders already shows he does not have blanket permission, and it is clear that he must go to Congress for authorization. Unfortunately, that's never stopped him before. If he does attack without congressional approval, he will be in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. Now, Obama seems to forget that Congress are the ones that hold the purse strings. And without congressional approval of a financial budget for his terrorist attacks, he has no way of paying for the Obama plan, which will make the plan hollow, as much of everything else that Obama has done. Now, I mentioned earlier about mission creep. When Iraq was invaded by ISIS, the Iraqi army ran away. Massive amounts of weapons which ISIS now use. Tanks, cannons, light, medium, and heavy weapons, all in working order and now in the ISIS arsenal. I cannot believe that Obama can be so naive to think that U.S. air power alone will be enough. It is inconceivable to believe nations friendly to ISIS, who finance ISIS, will not supply aircraft, busted missiles, and weapons to degrade the American power. So where do you stand with the Obama plan? Are you for it, against it? Are you worried? 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. In a related story, a senior Homeland Security DHS official confirmed to Congress on Wednesday that militants associated with the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL or ISIS, are planning to enter the United States via the porous southern border. Francis Taylor, Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysts at DHS, told senators during a hearing that ISIS supporters are known to be plotting ways to infiltrate the United States through the border. There have been Twitter social media exchanges among ISIS adherents across the globe speaking about that as a possibility. Taylor told Senator John McCain of Arizona in response to a question about recent reports on Twitter and Facebook of messages that would urge infiltration into the U.S. across that southern border. So while Obama continues his plans for mass amnesty after the November elections, the very terrorist groups whom Obama claims will be wiped out and destroyed plan on an ISIS invasion through Mexico. Now, last week we told you of the ISIS training grounds in Mexico, the connections with drug cartels and mules crossing the border. Each day we hear of West Coast boat landings of illegals. Imagine the carnage a small gang of thugs could do to a peaceful American population. Shopping malls, airports, docks, or schools. Imagine the possible carnage a militarized gang could do to many nuclear facilities in North America, or even the unguarded electrical grid or water purification systems in winter, or the thousands of miles of pipelines throughout North America. Our domestic frontline troops, the police, the sheriffs, the National Guard, the military reserve, may not be enough to prevent that carnage. Could this be the catalyst for activation of the War Measures Act and the suspension of democracy that the conspiracy theorists have been talking about for the last few years? Could the Obama administration purposely suspend Posse Comitatus, which denies domestic or foreign military armed troops on American soil? Is this what the FEMA camps built around America are really preparing for? And what if they do manage to invade? Will immigrant Muslims join the battle against domestic forces? Obama has created a nightmare scenario, and it is difficult to accept that his actions have not been designed to create this very action and the destruction of America. If that isn't enough, we reported last week 11 commercial jetliners were stolen from a Libyan airfield. While intelligence reports of these jetliners have been circulating within the U.S. intelligence agencies, they have yet to officially confirm or deny exactly what has happened to them. There are a number of commercial airlines in Libya that are missing, is all that one official would commit to. Meanwhile, most believe that the planes were stolen by Islamist militias operating out of the war-torn country. It is unclear how much fuel was in each plane or whether these militias have the resources to fly them into U.S. space. Most officials fear an attack on the African soil. But what if? What if Europe or North America is the focus? We know aircraft fuel is abundant in the Middle East. And let's face it, anything is possible for a price. So what do you think? Do you think the U.S. Commander-in-Chief, what do you think he should do to protect North America from these terrorists? 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287 if you are live. And if you'd like to send an email after the fact, VOCR2012@gmail.com.
Let's be clear about ISIL. They have rampaged across cities and villages, killing innocent, unarmed civilians in cowardly acts of violence. They abduct women and children and subject them to torture and rape and slavery. They have murdered Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, by the thousands. They target Christians and religious minorities, driving them from their homes, murdering them when they can. For no other reason and they practice a different religion. They declare their ambition to commit genocide against an ancient people. So ISIL speaks for no religion. Their victims are overwhelmingly Muslim, and no faith teaches people to massacre innocents. No just God would stand for what they did yesterday and what they do every single day. ISIL has no ideology of any value to human beings. Their ideology is bankrupt. They may claim out of expediency that they are at war with the United States or the West. The fact is they terrorize their neighbors and offer them nothing but an endless slavery to their empty vision and the collapse of any definition of civilized behavior. And people like this ultimately fail. They fail because the future is won by those who build and not destroy. And the world is shaped by people like Jim Foley and the overwhelming majority of humanity who are appalled by those who killed them.
ISIS or ISIL or whatever the Islamic State, whatever they're calling themselves this week, and whatever they call themselves tomorrow, aren't militants or rebels. They are not extremists. They are, as you pointed out, a 10 to 15,000 strong terrorist army, the largest, best equipped, wealthiest, and most sanguinary terror force on the planet, and it's growing. Their unbridled religious and ethnic cleansing poses an immediate threat to the new government of Prime Minister al-Abadi in Baghdad, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, and every single Christian, Yazidi, Shiite, and secular Sunni Muslim within their reach. And if they consolidate their control over their so-called caliphate, that genocidal fury is going to be turned against us. Now, Pope Francis was more direct in his comments yesterday than we've heard from our president today. And everyone, I think, certainly in our bureau, has seen the convert or die issues or warnings that were issued to Christians. Maybe the Pope has a better intelligence service than we do, or maybe he just cares more about human beings. Well, it takes, the golfer in chief is going to have to focus for a little while. One of the only good pieces of news in all of this is that ISIS, or ISIL, or whatever they call themselves, have now captured so much abandoned U.S. and Saddam-era Russian materiel and equipment that they are now recruiting and advertising for mechanics and technicians to maintain the armored vehicles. If we don't do more, like get another carrier battle group out there, we've made a serious mistake.
And 2 years ago today, an attack in Libya claimed the lives of Ambassador Stevens and his security detail. Internal email reveals that 3 months before the fatal terrorist attack, an explosion at Compound Wall created a fear factor when it came to working the night shift by the local security organization. Judicial Watch announced today that it had obtained 130 pages of new State Department documents revealing that local security guards working for Blue Mountain Group's BMG, the firm hired to protect the U.S. special mission in Benghazi, repeatedly abandoned their posts out of fear of their safety in the months leading up to the deadly terrorist attack on the special mission compound. The documents were obtained by Judicial Watch pursuant to a February the 25th, 2013 Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. You can find the lawsuit on any legal website. It's Judicial Watch versus U.S. Department of State, number 13-00243, and check it out. According to the documents, on June the 30th, 2012, 3 months before the Benghazi terrorist attack, a quality assurance compliance report from Blue Mountain Libya to Department of State contract specialist Neil Kern warned that a number of local security guards leaving their posts had put the U.S. Benghazi mission at risk. Due to the amount of local guard force members leaving out of fear of their safety and the long process to security check individuals, it made it very difficult to quickly react to a large drop in staff in quick succession, as had been occurring with all the incidents, especially when additional staff are requested. The same June 30 report advises that an explosion on the perimeter wall of June the 6th had promoted a fear factor with a lasting effect on this security staff. on the shift 2200 0600 hours on 11-6-2012. The guard's name is redacted. Emergency staff did not attend for his shift and gave no prior warning of absence, and replacements were not able to be sourced due to the time of evening, and the staff members were not answering their phones. It is believed that the explosive device set up on the compound perimeter had a lasting effect on certain members of the staff, and this promoted a fear factor when it came to working the night shift for this local security company. Additional emails confirm that in the months leading up to the terrorist attack, State Department officials were repeatedly informed of the Benghazi security staffing problems. And a manpower email went out around about July in desperation. And it said, per our conversation, the original A&E request for guard service was to run from June the 6th to June the 18th. Unfortunately, due to manpower issues and unforeseen last-minute resignations of BMG's guard staff, U.S. Mission Benghazi were only providing the below guards. And it was a minimum amount of guards, I can tell you that. In addition, email from BMG to State Department official Kern reveals that not only was the undermanned Benghazi mission security staff but causing any dissent, but the dissension among top security staffers was starting to creep in. Now it goes on and on and on, and 130 pages of various emails. It tells of horror stories of guards walking off shift and just never returning, of mass resignations by local security guards who believed it was too dangerous to do their job. The documents obtained by Judicial Watch cover the period from March the 1st through August the 31st, 2012. And significantly, no documents were provided by state for the time period of September immediately leading up to the September 11th attack that took the lives of Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans. The documents show that the U.S. special mission in Benghazi was a sitting duck, and that the State Department's local militia security feared for their own safety and wouldn't even show up to provide necessary protection. All security indicators were flashing red, and perhaps with a show of strength to secure the Benghazi mission, U.S. Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods might be alive today. Once again, our independent work continues to shed more light on the Benghazi matter. And with the latest information coming out of Congress, with the committee meetings and testimony starting September the 14th, we may know more, because Gowdy intends to ungag some Benghazi witnesses. You see, the Obama regime has aggressively gagged first-hand witnesses of those who survived the avoidable Benghazi terrorist attack of 9/11/12 in an attempt to cover up the truth from being revealed, which reveals denials of requests for much-needed security and a potential gun-running scheme to the Islamic terrorist group now known as the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, when the regime was attempting to bring down the Syrian leader, Bashar al-Assad. On Friday, Select Committee on Benghazi Chairman Trey Gowdy issued the following statement, indicating that no stone would be left unturned, and those gagged by Obama would be allowed to speak the truth, and the emphasis on truth was added. He said the committee has heard of these concerns, and they go to the heart of why Congress established this committee, to determine all the facts of what happened in Benghazi before, during, and after the terrorist attack that day. And we welcome the opportunity and expect to talk to personnel who were on the ground in Benghazi, their superiors, and anyone with relevant information related to the Benghazi terrorist attack. There are still facts to be learned about Benghazi and information that needs to be explained in greater detail to the American people, and this committee will do just that, says Gowdy. On May the 8th, the House of Representatives voted to create the Select Committee on Benghazi, and Congressman Trey Gowdy, a former prosecutor, was named chairman of the committee hearings, and they begin the week of September the 14th. So I am sure there's going to be fallout, and you know and I know that Hillary Clinton is going to be shaking in her boots.
Mr. Speaker, I thought nothing this president could ever say or do would surprise me anymore. But this flushed and breathless rush to embrace terrorists launching rockets at Israeli children is an unprecedented act of cowardice and betrayal.
Susan Rice was prepped to say the so-called protests were rooted in an internet video so as not to show a broader failure of policy. Now, we've impeached a president for lying about sex with an intern. A president has resigned in the face of certain impeachment for covering up a burglary. Why wouldn't we impeach this president for not protecting and defending Americans in the bloodbath known as Benghazi?
Josh, you've had Attorney General Eric Holder came out and he said that the inflow of Westerners into the civil war in Syria is, quote, the most frightening thing, more frightening than anything I have seen as Attorney General. You had the foreign policy experts in the Wall Street Journal talk about how this is instability not seen since the 1970s. Basically an all-out war, what's looking like an all-out war in Israel and Palestinian territories. You see the situation with terrorist group taking over vast territory in Iraq and in Syria. You see Russian aggression in Ukraine. You see concerns about Chinese aggression in the South China Sea. It doesn't seem like a time to be touting tranquility on the international scene. I mean, do you think the president's foreign policy bears any responsibility for any of this, or there's anything that he can do about any of this?
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Now, I believe, and many others believe, and some polling numbers tend to support this, that if there was a do-over again on the last election, I believe that Mitt Romney would have been a better candidate and a chance for redemption other than Obama. And if there had been an honest election devoid of vote rigging and dirty tricks, then America would be on track to return to its rightful and prestigious position of top dog in the world. Insight on Putin's Russia and the problems of the Middle East could have avoided today's problems. I also believe that Romney's business savvy could have dramatically reduced the 109 million currently unemployed by creating employment incentives, lowering business taxes, which, by the way, are some of the highest in the world, and nurtured a national growth in manufacturing. I believe Romney would have been able to negotiate in good faith with Congress and allies instead of ignoring and marginalizing them. He would have found common ground and positive movement instead of the constant grinding of ideas that Obama demands Congress swallow, sight unseen. I think Obama is a megalomaniac. I think he has deep psychological problems. I think he's incapable of being wrong or accepting any sound advice from experts. I believe that Obama's true faith has shaped the mess that we have in the Middle East and the southern border. Now, Mitt Romney has stated that he won't run again. Yet all signs point to the need for his leadership, and some claim they will draft him and convince him to once again attempt to right the ship of state and return respect and dignity and the rule of law back into the White House. You never know. He might even provide a business plan to balance a $17 trillion budget. Michael Moore was caught up with a few days ago, and he was asked about Obama, and he was quite succinct about it. He said the only thing Obama will be remembered for is the fact he was the first black president.
The situation in Iraq has improved. Violence has been reduced substantially from the horrific sectarian killing of 2006 and 2007. Al-Qaeda in Iraq has been dealt a serious blow by our troops and Iraq's security forces, and through our partnership with Sunni Arabs.
Last night, like millions of my fellow Americans, I listened intently to the President of the United States lay out his new strategy for Iraq. We all hoped and prayed the President would present us with a plan that would make things better. Instead, I fear that what the President has proposed is more likely to make things worse.
You give me this office, and in turn, my fears, doubts, insecurities, foibles, need for sleep, family life, vacations, leisure is gone. I mean, I am giving myself to you, and the American people should have no patience for whatever's going through your head, because you've got a job to do.
Attorney General Eric Holder came out and he said that the inflow of Westerners into the civil war in Syria is, quote, the most frightening thing, more frightening than anything I have seen as Attorney General. You had the foreign policy experts in the Wall Street Journal talk about how this is instability not seen since the 1970s, partisan foreign policy experts. I think that you see a wide range of people looking at basically an all-out war, what's looking like an all-out war in Israel and the Palestinian territories. You see the situation with the terrorist group taking over vast territory in Iraq and in Syria. You see Russian aggression in Ukraine. You see concerns about Chinese aggression in the South China Sea. It doesn't seem like a time to be touting tranquility on the international scene. I mean, do you think the president's foreign policy bears any responsibility for any of this, or there's anything that he can do about it?
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
And if you're picking us up on archive at a later date when we're already off the air, never fear. If you would like to make a mention, discuss an item, say your piece, you can always email vocr2012@gmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, 13 years ago today, the United States was attacked by terrorist cowards who destroyed innocent civilians' lives by hijacking planes and passengers and crashed them into buildings in New York and the Pentagon and attempted to crash another plane in Camp David. And if it wasn't for the brave souls on board the plane, they may have succeeded. But they gave their lives to protect other Americans. Thousands of citizens were slaughtered for that cause. And then President G.W. Bush vowed retribution, which resulted in the invasion of Afghanistan and a routing of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, a mission which ends officially this year under the Obama administration. President Obama has vowed to remove troops by the end of the year, claiming that is why he was elected, to end hostilities around the world by American forces. As in Iraq, when the American forces are withdrawn, the Taliban and others will fill the void left behind, and after billions of dollars spent, Afghanistan shall revert back to the backward country it was prior to the American invasion. The Taliban will return from the mountains in Pakistan, and enemies of the West will again set up their terrorist camps with the idea they will plan further escalations of terrorism into Europe and possibly North America. Thousands of lives lost, billions of dollars spent in both Afghanistan and Iraq, squandered because Obama chooses to withdraw the stability in the region and return the land back to lawlessness. I dare say that Barack Hussein Obama has done more harm to the United States and the free world than any other president or world leader alive or dead. His handling of foreign policy through Hillary Clinton has been an absolute disaster and certainly has not made the world or North America a safer place to live. Not even Jimmy Carter screwed up as much as the Obama administration have. Think about this. 109 million citizens still out of work. The largest welfare rolls and food stamp aid in history. An injection of $87 billion per month pumped into the U.S. economy by the federal government to provide a false sense of growth. A $17 trillion debt and growing exponentially by the day. A decimated military force whose generals have either been fired or force retired. And a Department of Justice who is ineffective and probably corrupt. Obama is a danger to the American way of life. He is a danger to America and a danger to freedom. And he needs to be removed before he completes his obvious mission of the total destruction of America. The Republicans need to impeach Obama, along with a number of his cronies who have assisted in taking America down the road to ruin for the last 6 years. The Democrat-led Senate will be cleaned out in November. And Republicans will again rule both houses, no doubt. And although they deny the idea of impeachment, I believe they will have no choice but to impeach when the ISIS tactics prove hollow and ineffectual. When the IRS scandal is fully revealed, when the Benghazi scandal is displayed to the citizens, and when Obama's legitimacy is shown to be illegal. Now, the only concern with all of that is that if Obama is impeached and steps down, you then have Joe Biden as President of the United States. And his sidekick will no doubt be Vice President Kerry. At least until 2016. What a terrifying thought. I mean, really, when you put it together, what a terrifying thought. From the extreme to the ridiculous. It might be the only way that Kerry will get anywhere close to the presidency. And sure as you know what is you know what, come 2016, John Kerry as vice president will run to become president. So whoever the Republicans are going to put up, one of three people will go up against the Republican nominee. Joe Biden, John Kerry, or Hillary Rodham Clinton. So the Republicans have some soul searching to do to decide and determine who they can bring into the fold, who they can elevate to that possible position that can beat any of those three. And once again, I look at Mitt Romney as the only logical successor to the Republican dynasty. I believe Mitt Romney will make a fine president of the United States, but he does need to be convinced, because spending $300 million of your own money twice to run for president is a little harsh. Will he have the support? Will he have your support if he does run? Those are the questions that we will be asking over the next little while. Because God forbid that John Kerry, Joe Biden or Hillary Rodham Clinton would be sitting in the throne of the United States as president. After seeing what they have accomplished in the last 6 years, it frightens me to no end. Now, as we head towards the end of the night, I got a nice story, a comfort story. One of those nicey-niceys to finish the night off, so it's not all doom and gloom. Story you won't hear on the news, because mainstream media, the rating whores, just won't tell you this kind of stuff. Thousands of bikers from around the country rolled and gathered outside the district Thursday, rolled into the city in remembrance of the September the 11th terrorist attack. Bikers from across the country began gathering at points around the region early Thursday of D.C. for the ride known as the 2 Million Bikers to D.C. Rally, with a large number assembling from the Harley-Davidson of Washington store just outside the district of Fort Washington. The ride took off around 10:45 a.m. with packs of bikers in dozens advancing into the city. Prince George's County Police closed Indian Head Highway, a major artery into the district, for an hour to accommodate the thousands who participated in the event. The event began last year. It was originally a response to a demonstration last year billed as the Million Muslim March on the National Mall, though the rally drew only a couple of dozen participants. Organizers of the ride said they felt the event was inappropriate for such a solemn day in U.S. history, and that's why they started the D.C. rally last year. So second year in, and it's showing to be a massive success. And I'm sure next year will be bigger, and it'll continue to get bigger, and it'll continue to get bigger as America shows its true colors. Because you know what? America is great. It truly is.
This is VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockets, on BlogTalkRadio.com, in association with Spy Gazette and the TerrorChat Radio Network.
But I'm going to ask you some questions, and if you can't answer these questions, then I'll leave you to draw whatever conclusion you want to draw about whether or not the media has provided sufficient oversight. Can you tell me why Chris Stevens was in Benghazi the night that he was killed? Do you know? Does it bother you whether or not you know why Chris Stevens was in Benghazi? Do you know why we were the last flag flying in Benghazi after the British had left and the Red Cross had been bombed? Do you know why requests for additional security were denied? Do you know why an ambassador asking for more security days and weeks before he was murdered and those requests went unheeded? Do you know the answer to why those requests went unheeded? Do you know why no assets were deployed during the siege? And I've heard the explanation, which defies logic, frankly, that we couldn't have gotten there in time, but you know, they didn't know when it was going to end. So how can you possibly cite that as an excuse? Do you know whether the president called any of our allies and said, can you help? We have men under attack. Can you answer that? Do any of you know why Susan Rice was picked? The Secretary of State did not go. She says she doesn't like Sunday talk shows. That's the only media venue she does not like, if that's true. Why was Susan Rice on the 5 Sunday talk show? Do you know the origin of this mythology that it was spawned as a spontaneous reaction to a video? Do you know where that started? Do you know how we got from no evidence of that to that being the official position of the administration? In conclusion, Congress is supposed to provide oversight. The voters are supposed to provide oversight. And you are supposed to provide oversight. That's why you have special liberties, and that's why you have special protections. I am not surprised that the President of the United States called this a phony scam. I'm not surprised that Secretary Clinton asked, what difference does it make? I'm not even surprised that Jay Carney said Benghazi happened a long time ago. I'm just surprised at how many people bought it.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
And we got to get out of here. I can't believe we've blown through an hour already. It's been a pleasure.
got a minute? We all have busy lives, and sometimes we forget the small things in life that make many people happy. We work hard, and we earn a great deal of money, or we hope to, and we spend a great deal of money. And yet there are those in our world who have no money to spend. There are those in this world that are fighting for survival as we speak. Give a moment to think of those people. Do what you can as a good human being. Do what you can to help their world be a little brighter. Good night, and we'll catch you back here on the next edition of VOCR Radio. This has been a TerraCast Network production.